and welcome to the Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to give you an insight on all things pharma and health, from discussing trends in the industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. And in the fourth series of the Medicine Box, we get a mix of industry and analyst opinion. We have experts discussing the key opportunities and challenges of Indian pharma and health, along with perspective from cutting-edge companies ranging from MNCs to the startup world. Our guest on today's podcast is Sujay Shetty of PwC. Sujay leads the health industry practice for PwC India. He has over 25 years' experience in the pharma and medical devices industry in India, UK and Southeast Asia. Sujay joins in today to discuss his thoughts on the Indian pharma and healthcare landscape with us. Hi Sujay, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Ekta.
Well, let's start with the fact that you all provide consulting to pharmaceutical companies. And the big theme which has actually existed for a lot of the pharmaceutical companies in the past couple of quarters, maybe in the last two quarters especially, has been cost cutting. Give us a sense in terms of what kind of cost containment are we seeing, and is this just the beginning? Are we going to probably see more?
Yeah, thank you, Ekta. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think to take a step back, pharma companies do tend to enjoy very good margins, just generally. But I think the last two, 3 years, taking a step back, I think the impact on the US market, the principal market, has been extremely competitive, subject to extreme competitive pressures due to a number of reasons, whether it's price erosion and so on and so forth. The India market itself has become tighter with the government raising prices, or rather controlling prices on increasing variety of drugs. So I think the way forward has always been for generics to watch the pennies, as they say, and to be very, very sharp about utilization of their working capital, their assets, their manufacturing. So by cost cutting, we mean, it's optimization across a range of things. For example, you see from their product portfolio, we can see divestments happening to cut back the tail. In their own manufacturing operations, you can see increased reliance on automation and digital, lowering the headcount in terms of procurement and direct cost spends, taking a shot there, in terms of looking at the models of distribution. So it's not just the optimization of the cost, but actually looking at business models that will make it much more leaner and nimbler. And that's driven by the reality that if you're in the generics business, you need to be very sharp on manufacturing, very sharp on all your expenses, because that's where you make your money, or rather survival, from. And in the context of the US market being what it is and Indian market being what it is. So you're quite right, it is the predominant theme that we see.
But what kind of cost containment measures are we seeing right now?
So we see it across all of the value chain. I mean, if you work backwards from the commercial organization, you'll see greater focus on doing more with less in terms of sales forces. You're looking at more digital automated tools in terms of being a little bit more contained on cost there, because that's a big portion of costs. If you take a look at manufacturing, the industry has historically run tons of OPEX programs, but trying to take it to the next level again with automation, much sharper focus there. There, of course, we need to point out that they tend to have a lot of regulatory spend on USFDA and others, the large majors, which you can't so much cut back on because that's got a different connotation. But insofar as keeping operations lean, mean and efficient, same way for the US markets, where ANDAs are a significant portion of spend, you see a lot of thinking, because the US market, again relating back to the pressures in the US market, thinking back on R&D, D productivity, not R, but the D part of productivity. How many ANDAs are we putting through? Are we efficient at the costs that we're making? So if you look at the value chain, commercial, R&D, and in the middle manufacturing, on every single one of those aspects, you'll see a very detailed look at the way the cost structure is organized. But it's not simply just taking a knife at the cost. It's about looking at that business model and seeing, are we fit for purpose? At least the bigger majors, can we do something more digitally? Can we do something more nimbly? It's not simply about taking human beings out or cutting back on some expenses. It's trying to understand the world we live in now is different from the one when we had a lot of 21 para 4 opportunities a few years ago. That world has changed, both in the US and in India. So we need to, as a model, be a lot more nimbler, a lot more use technology better. So that's
so maybe moving towards the digital framework is also something that we could probably be seeing for a lot of pharma companies. That's interesting, because what kind of digital transformation are we talking about?
This digital word, as you know, is a much abused word, and it get into a lot of discussion of different people on different ideas. But we see principally in three different areas. One, definitely driven by a lot of analytics that's coming in through use of mobile technologies in the sales force. So in the commercial organization, using more analytics. So there's a whole digital area there in terms of being more efficient in distribution, more efficient in gathering analytics from the front line to see how best to do your portfolios, how best to even reach your stockists and distributors. So there's that whole bit over there. What's called patient centricity, you know, around that. The second area would be around, you know, e-pharmacies and things like that, which are a separate business model, but then plays into you as a pharma company thinking, how do you work with those channels? So this is your impact on the commercial side. In the quality, in the supply chain, and it's again very interesting. It's looking at, you know, putting in, as you know, SAP, changes to SAP HANA. So a number of companies playing around with new age products in trying to, as they upgrade the IT infrastructure, because that will provide, again, superior analytics and lead a digital transformation with those companies. Then in the manufacturing itself, manufacturing is moving to more and more automated systems. So, you know, it's not the old way of doing things. Now, if you go to the lab, you'll see the concept of paperless labs. Everything is electronic, books, and so on and so forth. So there's a whole load of thinking around that. So these are the three principal areas, not like the whole company wanted to be a Google or a Facebook, but it, in very principal areas, very targeted interventions. To summarize, in the commercial organization, thinking about how to, in the distribution channel, in connections with physicians and patients, how can we get better data? What do we put in place? How do we use mobile technologies? In manufacturing, use of a lot of these new automation systems as you go more automated, more paperless. Even in quality remediation, which is a US FDA and others, how to use data more, using more automated systems. So I think it's you see digital across these two principal spaces more than any one place.
If you have to talk about cost containment geography-wise, where are the companies cutting back? Is it the US because of the kind of pressures that they're facing? Yeah. Is it India because of, say, the regulatory challenges? Or is it just across the board in terms of other geographies?
I think it's across the board. I think going back to my initial comments, I think they're looking at the tail. So even the US significantly would carry a big portion of spend, as that's the revenues are very high and the profitability is very high, but so do expenses sit out there. So it's very important to make out whether you can move stuff to India by way of shared services and others. So there's definitely that view that has been going on for some time. So some of the larger progressive companies look to make their US operations more efficient by either moving productions more nearshore, if possible, more easy said than done. But that's always a factor. And the second is shared services in terms of HR, finance, IT, how to work with, you know, back home with the HQs in India in much more efficient way because they tend to be smaller. Or if they have scale to work with the outsourcing companies in India. So US definitely, because that's a big portion of spend. India definitely, I mean, looking at all things India, which is, you know, you got a lot of cost sitting in manufacturing, a lot of cost sitting in distribution, a lot of that sitting in commercial. So I think these are the two principal geographies. Usually you'll find Indian companies to have less, smaller operations in ROW, Africa, Japan with one or two exceptions, but for the most part, they tend to be smaller. So there's not that many opportunities to squeeze on cost, but these are the two significant areas that you'd look to work on.
So where does this lead in terms of M&A in the Indian pharmaceutical space?
M&A?
Yes. M&A. Our company is going to be selling a couple of their plants. We've heard a lot about it, but it's tough for it to actually see the light of day.
I think definitely plant divestitures, because there seems to be, well, there's both. There is excess manufacturing in the areas companies don't want excess manufacturing, because as mentioned earlier, they are looking at more automated plants and some of the newer generation plants.
It doesn't have to only be plant divestment, but it could also be portfolio of drugs,
etc. Both of them. As I said earlier, in the commercial part of the cost containment, one of the ways to contain costs is to cut down on the tail. So definitely brands which you can't service, it's expensive to service, have field forces. So I think these two will continue. They've been there, and I think you've seen in the media mentions of a couple of companies, you know, talking about prospective sales. That will continue, because you need to unlock capital in India, domestic formulations, some places where some companies have built scale. So you'll see either a brand divestment or, you know, a division or a little bit more than that in some cases happening. Plants you'll see galore, because there's plenty in the market, and also some that have been built up in the old days when Baddi had, you know, tax breaks and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of spare capacity which people don't want or want to put up plants which are a little bit more automated. So I think both of these areas will continue, because you need capital and people will continue to look for opportunities there.
Okay. When you talk about spare capacity, what is the kind of spare capacity that pharma has at this point in time? And does that mean that there is lack of fresh capex that we would see simply because of the kind of supply which already exists?
No, I want to qualify the word spare capex, but that, so generally, if you look at capacity utilization across pharma plants, due to a number of reasons, due to regulatory reasons, they tend to be a certain percentage. You're not going to see like 100% utilization, and it's not meant to be that way as well. You might see in ranges from 19%, 20% up to 50, 60%, if that, those are the ranges. By spare capacity, we also have to take into consideration that you've got a host of third-party manufacturers in India, not just the mainstream pharma companies. So we have, I think, from a formulations point of view, very good capacity to service the current demand. But as we look into the future, companies, when they look into newer capabilities, like I mentioned in automated labs, automated manufacturing, that's where companies want to be. That's where the capacity is less. That's where, you know, from the point of view of quality, from the point of view of consistency, from the point of view of data, that's the kind of plants they'd like to build. That's less capacity. Your conventional capacity, in our opinion, is enough. But there is fresh capacity coming on stream as well. We've noticed, I think, last year, more than 50 projects in India, which are greenfield.
Okay.
A little bit, and it surprises that there's a good, healthy portion of API also in that, as you've been aware of some of our dependence on APIs over the years. So I think there is fresh capex coming to the point you raised about, is there a problem with capex? We don't think there's a problem with capex. But equally, pharma is carrying enough capacity locally.
Okay.
And I think that,
and this API
enough.
Opportunity, how big is the API opportunity? Are we seeing a lot shift from China to India permanently in terms of supply?
No, we don't see that. I think API, we need to qualify into two different buckets. You've got the base chemicals and the intermediates, where we were historically dependent on China. And that's the part that I don't know if anybody can do anything about it, but that's more in the remit of government, because those are at scale industries where you need to have very low cost of manufacturing, which is driven by all things low, with low cost of capital, low cost of everything, and to build skills. So that part China is very good at. And that part, of course, as you've read, we are very reliant on them.
But they have their capacity coming back to full scale after adhering to the pollution norms. That's what I'm trying to get.
Plenty more going on than that. There's pollution that took away capacity from China. And you've seen many Indian companies, you know, complaining that the costs have gone up. There is also consolidation that's going on in China within API industries, between larger and smaller manufacturers, driven by the government. So capacity will be a little bit hamstrung there. In fact, they might need capacity, and their own allopathic markets are growing. Historically, they've been a traditional market. So for a number of reasons, Chinese capacity, you know, insofar as India is concerned, will continue to be under stress. You'll find imports. So that's one part, whether we can access their market for imports. The second part is our own over-reliance and what are we doing about it. And I think there, so you need to divide that in two categories. At fine chemical level, at the proper top API level, the advanced chemicals, India is still a leader. There's no doubt about that. If you look into the US FDA filings, most of the DMFs are filed from Indian companies. Chinese, like I said, are leaders from base chemicals to N-1. That's where capacity needs to come up. And that's, I think, more in the government purview, because the number of things that make an API company successful or not, environmental norms, cost of capital, are mostly in the remit of the government. And I think there's been a lot of thinking since the initial reports came out that we are over-reliant and what to do about that. So at the moment, the situation is what it is. Indian companies do have a higher cost of inputs. Basis China. The longer term, whether we can switch that reliance locally will be watched. I think it's an opportunity for some Indian companies as well.
Exactly.
Our scale manufacturers of APIs to grow the India footprint more.
So the current API manufacturers are probably benefiting, but you're not seeing a huge amount of fresh capex which is coming up in India on account of the API opportunity.
Look, like I said, I think when we were tracking these 50 plus plants, we were surprised to see that a big portion of that came in the API business.
Okay.
So there is money going into API. And people are understanding, because not all can grow API, not all cities want API. You know, if you have excess land where you're located, then only then you can scale up, so on and so forth. It's got definite barriers to entry into it in terms of land acquisition, environmental norms. So I think within that context, Indian companies have identified that. And I think when you look at the broader US-China trade friction as well, the questions are being asked whether we can step into the supply chain where Chinese are having a problem. It's a very difficult question. It's not automatic, that answer. Perhaps maybe Vietnam or somebody else might gain more. But at least Indian companies are trying to say, is there a role for us to play, at least those who have API at scale? So I think it is, you know, you'll see some acceleration in that over the next 1 or 2 years. It's certainly an area where many people are watching based on the opportunity that you've just mentioned.
We have the US elections coming up as well. And again, you know, that creates fears about what could happen with generic pharma and pricing, etc. And now we probably even have a new favored nations policy, which could be something that Trump could introduce. Any work that you all might have done on that, on say what the favored nations policy could be?
No, we've not done work, but broadly on the US and the Trump points, I think the one thing that we did pick up when speaking to industry was perhaps, so more than Trump, I think it was the previous FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, who kept the markets extremely open. I think Indian companies saw a record spate of ANDA approvals in the same period. So I think from a downstream marketing point of view, Indian companies have enjoyed very good access to US markets. On the upstream side, of course, the US FDA has been very vigilant. And so you've seen, how should we say, issues there, shortages, bottlenecks, because the US FDA has been very, very concerned about quality of product. But on the downstream marketing side, the markets have always been open. And that was within Trump's period. And now, of course, Scott is not there, it's somebody else. So I think in terms of access to the US market, in terms of ANDAs and places to play, we don't see that going anywhere. If anything, the conversation towards generics continues to be favorable to generics. What the generics need to worry about mostly is the consolidation in the US market amongst their insurance companies and pharmacy retail and big distributors. That's the behavior. But the other thing that we do see is that driven more from a US FDA and quality point of view, sometimes Indian companies of late do wonder whether, you know, it's better off keeping manufacturing closer to nearshore, to the US.
To the US itself.
To the US, because it might be sometimes a little bit more easier in terms of showing your progress in quality-related matters to the agency.
So is there a move which is taking
place? We're not seen, but I think, but we're surprised at the way, not surprised, but we expected discussions to go that way, but we do see that coming up in discussion that if at all fresh capex needs to come up, historically, one would have never considered any other location than India, but now people do ask that question, given the money that we spend on regulatory purposes, given that US is almost a third to a half of our book of business. Why don't we, you know, also consider US? Because the cost of manufacturing in the US has gone down in many areas due to automation. In specific areas like injectables and others where there is a market shortage, it's definitely an attractive market to consider for citing for capex.
Haven't we improved, say, at the margin when it comes to FDA issues? I mean, it's difficult to say because 2019 in particular has been very rough in terms of, say, the OAIs at least being issued to pharma companies. But at the margin, are we better?
We're better. I think you've seen the data integrity issues go down because I think initially, fair to say, there was a lot of suspicion in the aftermath of the Ranbaxy issues, a little bit of denial and suspicion. But I think the industry has come to acknowledge US is, you know, sort of the most important market. Having access to that market is important, and the FDA is genuinely worried about quality. And so we should focus on getting some trust with the agency. And I think that efforts are now beginning to bear fruit. Indian companies are no more or no less hit by those 483s than US companies. In fact, one could argue India has a relatively lesser number now. So I think the understanding and the trust, and it's our understanding that the agency is seeing a lot of efforts going on, you know, by Indian, especially if you go to the large Indian companies, it's very difficult to now find people who are trying to game the system. I mean, they're trying to make an honest attempt at spending big money at attracting the right skill sets or putting in processes, technology and people in place. Some have been more successful than the others. So I think to your point, where the agency and the Indian farmer is concerned, yes, there will be concerns about quality because you've got 500 plus plants in India, so you have to be always vigilant. Not all are as good or as committed. So that will continue. But I think at least between the larger pharma who cater to the US market and agency, there's a better understanding of each other's position than there was. And eventually you'll see it plateauing out like any other area as Indian companies upgrade their skills. And considerable work, like you said, have gone on in that area. But for us as a manufacturing nation, that is our biggest play. One third to one half of our book of business of our big pharma is the US market. We are 30% odd of the pills that are filled in the US. We are critical for the US healthcare debate as well. So it is by far our single most important market. So the relationship with the agency and the work we do in regulatory quality and compliance, quality systems is always going to be fundamental and front and center.
Okay. Well, Sujay, before we wrap up this conversation, leave us with some three of the key trends that we could probably expect within the Indian pharma manufacturers. probably in the near term, medium term?
I think one portion that I really did want to point out, I mean, you spoke about the US, but it's India and Indian government over the last 4 years that I think the industry, so I'll classify it in two, three buckets, as you said. One is, I think, the industry hopes that the price sort of controls or increasing block of products, which is understandable given the largely affordability issue. But there's hope that there'll be some stability in that.
Because is India still a favored market because of the kind of growth rates despite price control? I mean, you're still growing.
You're talking about US foreign companies coming to India?
Not foreign companies, right. Indian companies.
India is still a very favored market because, you know, you have a strong branded generic market. Mm-hmm. And once you have a good franchise, it is a good market to be in. So I think India, after the US or in parallel with US for some companies, is the most important market, mm-hmm. US, India. Mm-hmm. And rest of the others are basically ROW. So mm-hmm. you need to get India right. And so I think in that, the industry, one is, of course, the government stability of policies. I think there's a lot that was mentioned, the last draft pharma policy. I think the industry is hoping for better engagement because that draft pharma policy has got some sensible and some not so sensible points. For example, one brand, one price, if you've seen that, it's a bit confusing for most people how that works. So there's that whole bucket around what the government thinks and wants to do with its next 5 years that's important. The second bucket is around Ayushman Bharat. I think the initial wave, which is driven by service providers, healthcare delivery people, insurance companies, will eventually give way to pharma companies also assessing their own play. I mean, you know, they have to be very clear about those, the price points, volume that that program is leading into, the effect on generic industry. I think all of that will begin impacting pharma. And I think pharma will require, you know, much more understanding and support from the government. I think the third is in the biotech area, which is growing. There is a Biodiversity Act which the government has, which is in many of its provisions are impossible to comprehend, in fact, highly restrictive. And our recommendation has been to the government as well to engage with industry. I mean, there's so many anomalies in there that it doesn't provoke innovation, which brings me back to the last point. You can only be as good as you are if you don't innovate. And you know, China's done a lot. We keep praising the China bucket.
But China's probably run far ahead of us when it comes to
innovation. Also it's also for a number of reasons. But imagine of all the industries that we have, it's actually pharma formulations, which keeps India on the map. In every other industry, we have competition which breathes down our back. But here, because of the regulatory nature of the industry, our positioning in the US market, at least in formulations, has been of a scale that has not been matched by China. In the kind of work we do, they're probably 4 or 5 years behind. But as you get to the newer age products, the monoclonal antibodies, the biosimilars, you need a new thinking, which means the regulatory agency bandwidth to approve, to think through the understanding of those products. And the Biodiversity Act comes well within that. And third is the innovation point. I think even in the recent budget that we saw, I think very little is mentioned of the fact that if you really want to grow, then you need to support innovation. You know, there are n number of ways to support it. You could be tax, you could give tax breaks. You could think of the way China has done by providing large-scale infrastructure for innovation. You could plug the leaks in data exclusivity laws, which have still not been addressed. So I think this would be very important. So you said, which are the three things? Everything we discussed is business as usual in the world as we know it. And the generics do know that the party that we had in the 1990s and the 2000s, which were essentially centered around para four opportunities, have drawn to a close. Its transformation to specialty pharma, the high spend around that. So there's a lot of uncertainty. Added to the fact in India itself, the atmosphere is very uncertain. So, you know, the government spoke about putting in a UCPMP, which is Uniform Code for Selling Practices, to bring sanity. So I think summarizing this entire piece that I say, there's that whole regulation piece that the government must engage, whether it's a draft pharma policy, guidelines for selling, that's one bit. The second bit is around innovation. I think thinking through if you're going to be big in the age, new age stuff, whether it's biosimilars or, you know, cell and gene therapies are some distance away. But even if you want to attract those therapies, CAR T, how do you do that within the context? The current discussions are now all over. They're fit for purpose and they've lived their day. We've become gorillas in generics. That day and age is well settled and past. And your companies are grappling with now what to do post 2022, 23, when there's more cell and gene therapies, more innovation-based medicine. How do you address that point? How do you encourage your own companies, A, and how do you encourage more innovative companies from overseas to come in? So I think these are the two big buckets. Your existing generic, try and get your regulatory. Their demand would be, let's try and think of all of our regulatory regime should be a little bit more user-friendly, as it were. And the second bit is around innovation. I think these are the two big bits that I just leave behind.
Okay. All right, Sujay. Thanks very much for joining in and talking to us on the Medicine Box. So it is definitely a lot about innovation and what the government probably needs to do to encourage innovation within the pharmaceutical and healthcare space. Thanks very much.